parking lot, you need a parking pass so you don't get a ticket. Please see, they're on the back, so please take a pass and put it in your car. I also want to say thank you to Philip and to City College for us being able to be here because we're running on generators after the electrical problems of last week, so it's a miracle we're here. And the backup plan was to go back to the board, which we know is not a very... easy spot after dark, so I'm glad we were able to get that fixed and have the generator help us out. So tonight we're going to be doing a couple of things. We're going to first be doing a final review of the parameters, and then after we do that, we're going to be talking about the actual RFQ process and what's going to come next. And then we're going to have a short conversation about ongoing coordination between and among all of the players that are at large working in this area to make sure that we're doing a good job of making sure that we're tracking everything, because we already have a couple of examples where that's not happening. We want to make sure that we want to build on what planning is doing and be able to take it to the next level. And then we'll talk, time for public comment, and close out the meeting. And one thing that we will do is for the October meeting, we're going to need to pick a different date because it falls on Indigenous People / Columbus Day, a regular scheduled meeting. So we'll just be by, we'll probably do a poll, figure out what works for the group, and then we'll let everybody know. So so with that, we're going to move to the, let's go to the minutes.
I have just one comment on the July 11th. Small comment. On page 9, the close of the meeting, third line, talking about the Geneva and San Jose safety shred. It's not going to be staffed by San Jose. It's going to be staffed by MTA.
Item 7A, page 9, has the third line down?
Say on page 10 of the August 8th, I think it's August 8th minutes.
Give a second to get it. We're on
July still.
Oh. Does anybody have any comments or edits that you can have made to the July 11th meeting minutes? Okay. So with the one change to make it SFMTA, not San Jose, do you have a motion to approve?
So
all in favor?
Well, we need a second.
Oh, second.
Second by Howard. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? And all abstain because that is not at the meeting. Okay, now let's move to August meeting. So let me first hear from my colleagues if anybody has any notes for that.
Okay, Jennifer, you open up.
Page 10, the August minutes. Number 3, it's Roman 10, number 3. It says SNA supports more open space and the 2 consecutive acres of open space, meaning a minimum of 2 acres. That was always a minimum, 2 acres, consecutive open space. Thank you.
I was absent.
Hold on a second. Just pass the high grounds so everyone can hear.
Thanks. Page 1. I believe I was absent, which correctly reflected on the first page, but it also says I was present.
Yes,
sir.
There's more than one. Yes, your body going is good. Okay. Great.
Any last comments?
Okay. Okay, so with those two edits of the minimum of 2 acres and making sure Howard is only absent and not present.
I move to approve.
Okay, move to approve. Is there a second? John seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. All right. Tonight we're looking to have us do the final read of the collective document and be able to vote and endorse it and move on. I say that prematurely just because that's the intention of tonight's meeting, and if we're successful in doing so, what will happen at the next set of meetings is going to be to continue to work together collectively. We want to do some work around understanding more about each community that's going to be part of this, kind of like what Westwood Park did many meetings ago when they brought their map. There would be an opportunity to hear from the different stakeholders that are involved to continue to build the connective fiber that will hold us together as we continue to work on the project as one of the things that we'll be focused on, as well as continuing to work on the process. So with that, what I'd like to do now is let's take a look at, let's move to item number 3 and talk about, I'm reading the wrong book. Hold on. 1 second.
Phil.
So I'm going to leave one table just for all my notes. So I want to do a review of the new edits. So there's a combination of the edits that were provided via feedback at the last meeting, as well as there's the note, which was the questions that were asked added as well. But that's a handout that's in a grid matrix of all the open questions that were raised as well. Emily?
Yes.
We're not planning on having you take us through the edits, are you?
I was not. No.
So let's go directly. So let's go to public comment and let's hear people speak. And then we'll have a chance for us to discuss and then take a vote. Yeah, Jen, come on.
The SNA Bahalo Reservoir Committee would like to express our appreciation of the addition of a preamble that provides context for the many principles and parameters we worked on individually. In focusing on principles and parameters, it can be easy to lose sight of the big issues affecting the adjoining neighborhoods and City College. We would like to add to the existing preamble that open space is important to integrating the development with its surrounding neighborhoods. I also have a question. We understand that changes to the citywide residential guidelines are being discussed. We would like to understand what is being proposed, the process for approval, and how changes to current guidelines might affect the Balboa Reservoir project. Thank you.
Great, and we have an answer for that too tonight. Any other public comments?
Bob Byrne, SMA. There is going to be a development proposed or for planning purposes, 500 units. There's currently about 1,200 parking spaces that will disappear when the 500 units are put in. If only half a parking space per unit, that's 250 to replace 1,200. Is that being addressed? I'm not sure I see that in any of the paperwork. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rita Evans. I have been a Sunnyside resident since 1987, and I'm a member of the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association Balboa Reservoir Committee. The principles and parameters for the proposed development, they're very focused on details, but there are some omissions in terms of a broader perspective. I want to mention 3 things. How to replace parking used by City College student, faculty, and staff has not been adequately addressed. Nor has the link between access to parking and CCSF's enrollment. The continued decline in enrollment poses an ongoing threat to this unique community asset. Second, even in its revised form, the principles and parameters document continues to assume that residents of existing neighborhoods, those of us who already live here, will absorb the impacts of increased traffic, greater parking demand, more transit demand, et cetera, rather than directing those impacts to the new residents and the developer. Third, we have pressing transportation and environmental concerns. A clear commitment to concrete solutions, such as a developer-funded shuttle and construction of replacement parking, those things are needed for neighbors to support the project. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Yes. Yeah, Steve Zeltzer, United Public Workers for Action. We are opposed to this privatization of this property. We think that Mayor Ed Lee and his relationship with the developers is pushing this forward to steal the land from the people of San Francisco and from City College. You have no right to take this land. It belongs to City College. It should be used for public education. And what's driving this is the speculators who really run San Francisco. That's what's driving this development. The students here need the parking for this college. That should be a priority, to keep the students that already exist here to stay here. We have developers and people who want the corporate control of this. We're against private developers having anything to do with this. We can have public funding, public construction. What about the arts center? That should be discussed here, but that's not apparently on your agenda. Why not? That was voted by the people of San Francisco, who apparently you don't give a damn about. They come secondary to the corporate interests, the developer interests, who are really driving this board. So my view is the workers, the people of San Francisco, need to put an end to this charade and really develop this for the use of City College, the students, the faculty, and the staff. And we're wasting city money, we're wasting tax money with this whole process here, and it should not be done by this group here who are appointed. There's no labor representative on this group. There's no union representative. This is for the privatization of City College. We're going to organize against it. We're going to stop it. And I think that, again, it shows where the direction of the city is going. For the developers who want to make profit on housing, million-dollar condos, market housing, we're against that. We need more working-class housing in San Francisco, not market rate, not what you call moderate housing. So our view is this whole thing has to be stopped, and actually you're not representing the people of San Francisco, you're representing the developers who really organized to put this thing forward.
I'm Ellen Wall from Sunnyside Neighborhood Association. I also teach in the English department at City College. I wasn't going to say anything, but our previous speaker was so brilliant. I just had to get up and say, yes, that's exactly what needs to be done. And I hope you'll let the rest of us know when we need to rally to march against this thing. Thank you so much.
My name is Hedda Thiemann. I live in Westwood Park. And it is a repeat of what I had said before. Mayor Lee is forced to build housing, and that will add another 100,000 inhabitants to the county of San Francisco. My question is, where are they going to be educated? If you are limiting the property space for City College. And I think that is poor planning. That is poor city planning. And you will regret that later in 20, 30 years. Rethink this all. Keep the property for City College. That's the bottom line. I know you put in lots of work and details. I understand that. You don't even have a provision there, if you rent it, that it will only be rented for people who work in San Francisco. That is not clear. And there's nobody who will control that. There's no agency who will check that. You are so close to the 280 freeway. The people will just try to get a cheap apartment and work in Silicon Valley, and that doesn't solve San Francisco's problems.
Corey Smith, representing the 300 members of the San Francisco Housing Action Coalition. I've been with all of you throughout the course of the year, think you're doing an amazing job. You're balancing a number of different opinions. I don't think anybody in this room is 100% happy with every single piece of it, but that's not what it's about. It's about the whole group, so thank you for everything that you're doing.
Hi, my name is Chris Peterson, a resident of the area. Overall, I do support the proposal. I think it's vital for this property to be used to create a significant amount of additional housing for the city. I do agree that there are significant transportation challenges here. One approach for dealing with that I hope you all and other city agencies will look at creatively and vigorously is using the site as housing for City College students, City College staff, and faculty. That's a way of addressing the city's housing needs and doing it in a way that doesn't generate massive amounts of new automobile traffic. But I think the precisely wrong approach would be to push for the creation of large amounts of parking associated with the site. That will be a recipe for guaranteeing that this will be housing that's used by people who are commuting to Silicon Valley or other places. If it's really a more transit-oriented, pedestrian-oriented development, I think that will tend to decrease the traffic impacts associated with the competitor.
Alan Mueller, faculty. And I think the language will be okay, but I just want to caution on the last principle, page 14, or in any place where you talk about the City College master planning effort. I was just reviewing when I was on the master planning effort years ago, and we followed what was called the Oregon experience. Anyway, it was that it really is the users of an institution that have to be paramount and have to be paid attention to. Sometimes I get the feeling, and I've been to meetings this time, that the master plan is really being more conceived by consultants in the administration. So just maybe the word where we say work with City College, perhaps put users in there or community of or something. So it's not just a dialogue with administration and the consultants, because that's not the way to plan educational facilities. And it says note that the facilities master plan will be subject to approval. It's kind of convoluted language. The facilities master plan must be approved by the Board of Trustees. This sounds a little watered down. So wherever that tone can be changed, I think make it a stronger document.
So it's principle four, number eight.
Principle 4A?
It's 4 in the parameter itself. 14. 13 in the red line.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, I'm Theodore from Excelsior, and my main motivation to go to all these meetings is because I see there is a need for a lot more housing. I don't care if the developers make a profit or not, but what we need are places for people to go, places for our children. They're not waiting for the tech bros to move out when they grow up. They need some place to stay. So I think having housing here and in many other places throughout the city and throughout the Bay Area is crucial for the coming years. Thank you.
Hi, Chris Hansen. I apologize for being not as prepared as I'd like to be, and also I'd like to apologize. My last public comment, I did not actually characterize the Board of Supervisors. Well, actually, it was a written comment about the Board of Supervisors resolution, which there was something in the Board of Supervisors resolution about creating the request for proposals. I had a hard time finding it on vacation when I wrote that, but anyway, so I wanted to correct that. I don't feel that this document that you guys have worked so hard on will really protect the community. So I guess that's all I have to say right now. Thanks.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask the CAC members to break up that vote into two parts. The first vote should be on the preamble. The second part should be on the development parameters. The reason for that is that the preamble very well summarizes what the community wants, the priorities that the community has. On the other hand, the development parameters do not align with the preamble. And until such time that the development parameters align with the community's priorities, I feel that the community, not just myself, believes that development parameters should be voted no on. So I'd like to break it up into two parts. I suggest that you do break it up into two parts. I'm pretty sure everybody in here would love the preamble contents. On the other hand, I don't think the people in the community would back up the development parameters because of the fact that it does not reflect what the community wants. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Roberto Karaskia. I am new to these meetings here, and this is the very first one I've gotten a chance to attend, so I'm very sorry for not being prepared as the rest of the people in the hall. But hearing this gentleman to the right that was on the video camera seems to align a lot with what my viewpoint would be. Born and raised in San Francisco, and not quite sure on the timeline of when this was initially approved. But if you look at the way Ocean Avenue is now increased compared to the way it's been 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, to the way it is now, increasing amount of apartments available in the neighborhood, which are all getting affected. I do live very close to City College, as I said, born and raised in the neighborhood. So to have less parking available for students, if there is any type of initiation to put more like a second level or like San Francisco State has where there's multiple level parking to do it. I know there's some people that have said, you know, they'll probably just go down 280 to go to their jobs down there, or they want to make it a less parking available to make it more neighborhood oriented. I don't think that's correct, because San Francisco is San Francisco. It's always been the way it is. Everybody has cars. The people that are starting to come into the city, yes, bike riding has increased and that type of transportation, but people will always have cars. And I have to deal with people parking in front of my house, and it's extremely full. So to say that, yeah, if we lived in a hypothetical world where we want everything to be perfect and beautiful, then yeah, everyone would be walking, you know, to their jobs or have that capability, and that's just not the case. Thank you for hearing me.
Hello, Harry Bernstein, City College. I would just like to again put in a request that if there is the 450 to 500 units, and I've been hearing that there could be even more than 500 units, but if there is anything like that, that the developers have a requirement to provide replacement parking, because I don't see that coming from any other source. I'm still worried about the compatibility between a large housing development and the mission of the college, which is still trying to dig itself from 60,000 back to 100,000 students, and I have a feeling that those two factors would be opposing one another.
Any last comments?
I wrote it down because I never get it all said. The first parameter I wanted to change is
the mic.
Oh, I'm sorry, Laura Fry, lost my car. Under housing, add principle number 4 on overall city policy. To fulfill the obligation to honor the city policy to develop in a way compatible with the surrounding area, which is the city policy. Build no more than 500 units. And then in urban design, change and add to principle number 2C. It says building heights should fall. It should be building heights will fall within a range of 25 to 65 feet. And then add heights over 40 feet up to 65 feet will be on the southern part of the east side only. That was the original plan. And to me, it's still the elephant in the room that there's no talk of number of units, no talk of building mass, no talk of density. And the impetus for Supervisor Yee to request the CAC was because neighbors were concerned about the impact of the reservoir project. And the size of the project is the very biggest factor that's going to create impact, going to impact everything. So I can't believe it. We still aren't talking number of units or building mass size. And then again, I want to reiterate, I said before, RFPs rarely get changed to decrease density. Developers, they have monetary interest to maximize density. The planning department, I know they have a difficult job, but 90% of its funding comes from developers. And so logically, they're listening to developers. They're supporting developers and their interests. And because of this, I think it's very important that the RFP is written with a defined size, defined body mass, defined number of units, something. And then also, like other people have said, we've all said many times,
okay, so shall I open up to comments? I'd like to go first.
Okay, in reviewing this, I wanted to express my appreciation to the staff for pulling together the policy standards and codes, and specifically in for the Westbrook Park neighborhood, for specifically identifying within that particular section the Westbrook Park residential design guidelines. And I am assuming that this is going to be part of this document, will be part of the RFP, right? Correct?
Yes.
Which document?
The document that says relevant policies, standards, and codes to the Balboa Reservoir.
Yeah, it'll be an exhibit attached to the RFQ.
So that will be very specifically stated. So I want to say I appreciate the fact that that was done and that was pulled together from all the other different memos and documents, and that on behalf of the Westwood Park neighborhood, that the Westwood Park residential design guidelines is included. I want to express my appreciation for the fact that you have addressed my concerns with regard to disability access and access generally, and that with regard to the additional wording regarding surrounding neighborhoods, that you have specifically identified those neighborhoods, including the Sunnyside and Westwood Park and others, in relevant areas throughout the document. I do, however, I'm going to be expressing the concern of the neighborhood, and that is that, again, the replacement parking for City College has not been adequately addressed as far as the neighborhood is concerned. That parking, one-to-one parking in general, issues that are going to be affecting the individuals who live there have not been addressed. That although there is a relevant section on having significant ownership, it is not specific in the document. The affordability with regard to Westwood Park's position is that there's a higher percentage of 33%, the 33% should be allocated to the middle class, i.e. 120% to 150% of the adjusted mean income, AMI. That the building height, it needs to be specifically stated that on the west side, that it will not be more than 28 feet. on the west side, which is also close to Plymouth Avenue, but it also incorporates San Ramon, and it incorporates West Wildwood and all those streets on that west side. That the open space be a minimum of a 2-acre park. I would love a 3-acre park, but 2-acre park, an absolute minimum, and it's not specifically stated that that would be there. And that 500 units maximum is not specifically stated in the document. And of course, those are the concerns of the neighborhood that have been longstanding and have been expressed by many people who have addressed this body.
Thank you. My name is Howard Shum, and I represent the Ocean Avenue Association, which I'm a board member of, as well as the Ocean Avenue businesses, informally, obviously. They didn't elect me, but they, you know. I was appointed by the mayor as one of the at-large positions. So that's the perspective, that's the lens that I'm trying to gauge this process, and it's been a long process. It's been a learning process for myself. I appreciate the staff participation in the process in educating, I hope, all of us in what this project can be. But I also realize that this is not something that where everyone will be satisfied. And I've struggled with that because you know, we want to build a consensus and we want to build a community consensus, and it's just not always possible. These are proposed development principles and parameters. We're not setting forth, you know, exact scripture of that, what needs to be done. These are principles and parameters that will be taken by developers, unknown who those developers are going to be, and there will be some give and take. So I think for a public process, I'm speaking for myself, it's been a very interesting and I think communicative type of process that all of us have been going through. I don't support everything in these principles and parameters. Obviously, everyone in this group does not as well, but I'm hoping that it's something that we can all live with. Very general comments. I don't have any specific comments as to changes here and there, but I'm just hoping that there are people in my shoes as well that have participated in the process and have been moved and are where I'm at finally. So thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. My name is Bridget Davila and I'm a trustee for City College. And my first question is, I think I've been working off of the wrong document because I didn't see this beautiful preamble. And I believe the preamble is here in this one. Okay, yes, it was a very nice preamble. And I have some very specific suggestions, so if you'll bear with me the copy that I've annotated. The first thing is regarding housing. So with principle number one, build new housing for people in a range of income levels, I just have a question here and I'd like it to be answered because I see 33% affordable housing. Our consensus was at least 50% affordable housing, and I'm not sure if the 33% represents a portion of the 50%. Okay, that's not clear, and it would be great if it could be a little more clear. Or at least it's not clear to me, and so I'm imagining it may not be that clear to other folks too. Also, in principle number one, I know that you've included City College's faculty housing ideas. I would like to see it in principle number one as well.
included in there as well. In fact, I would like to see it in just about every pencil. But let's stick to housing for now.
Where would you put it? Where would you recommend it?
Well, since it's not there at all, it looks like it may need another whole letter itself or number.
It's currently 2D.
I know it's currently 2D. I think it belongs in number one also. That's my position on it, that because it looks like there's no allowance for faculty housing there or City College's plans to develop that.
Maybe it's part of C, because you talked about middle class housing, but the talk about part
of
population.
Yeah, that would be fine. And moving along. I would also mention it in principle three, which means it would be mentioned three different times. And I would include, since principle three is about helping to alleviate the city's undersupply of housing, one of the critical issues in San Francisco right now is the lack of faculty housing at the SFUSD level for City College faculty. So we might be able to have some kind of joint relationship on that. But I think that would help to make that a C as well for principle number three. Okay, transportation. This is the big one. All right. So I think everybody here has heard me talk about this before, so I'll just say generally before I get into the specifics that City College is using the Balboa Reservoir for parking right now. However, Wednesday pops. I really think that we need to look at all the possible transit studies regarding this. Now, one thing overall that I don't see in transportation is the garage that the Board of Trustees has recommended. So I'd like to see that included, and I'll give you specific areas in a minute where you could include that. We asked for a flexible green garage that would include a lot of the things that are in other principles in transportation regarding bicycles, electric cars, and that sort of thing. And the flexibility aspect would be, it could be turned into another use if we no longer needed parking, which is unlikely in the short time frame.
Can I ask a clarifying question? Is that this parking structure, is this a parking structure that's a part of the City College's master plan? Or is it about the, or is it, I'm not following
you. Okay, so City College passed a Balboa, Balboa Reservoir Resolution, and that was included in the Balboa Reservoir Resolution. So, and that would offset the loss of parking that we have, if not make it up entirely. I don't want to go revisit that because we've talked about that.
No, and I'm just asking, is it being articulated as a necessary part of the principles? Or is it part of this? You just heard that they're doing the master planning and they're proposing several garages on the City College site across the street. So I'm just trying to understand: is it specific to our site here, or is it a part of the master plan?
That is an excellent question. But I would think for the Performing Arts Center, we would need some parking adjacent to the Performing Arts Center. I think it's a good question because we're dealing with two huge plans at the same time, and we need to coordinate those. And part of that gets into what one of my questions is about having someone mention that parking should all be near the freeway, which may be a great idea. I don't know. So that remains to be seen. But my point here is that the parking needs to be offset. I don't think I need to belabor the point of what City College has gone through. It's been a perfect storm for us, and our enrollment has been hit. And we've had a significant decrease in funding, and I don't want to exacerbate that even more. That said, I do want to say that I really think we need to pay attention to the transit studies that are ongoing. I know there's several ongoing. We need to coordinate those. I am not going to say anything about needing every single spot in there until I know we need every single spot in the reservoir. Like I said, my key point here is that we do not
offset enrollment any more than it already is. And so that's why I think we need to look very carefully at this. And that's why I'm saying this should be included in the actual garage should be included in the transportation. I'm not sure where we would put that, but I want to see it in there. Okay. In C, under transportation, principle one, recognizing that the Balboa Reservoir is utilized for parking for the CCSF community, I'd like that to start number C, or letter C, because it's imperative that any parking and transportation management plan has to include the needs of the City College community. Okay. Bear with me, folks. Most of mine are all in the transportation area. I think an excellent place to reference the parking garage would be in B, under principle number two.
B?
B. Also, under F, principle number 2F, I had a question there, and I don't know if City College's collaboration should be mentioned here. So under those bulleted points. And I realize I'm being redundant, but I think this isn't very important.
Did you want those included in all the bullets?
And no, just the bullets under F. I wanted to know about principle three. I have a question here. And does A refer to relocating parking to the freeway side? That was unclear to me, so if I could understand that, I would appreciate it. And let's see. The last one is regarding, I believe it's principle number four. And it could be E or F. The last numbered part of the resolution, the Balboa Reservoir resolution that the Board of Trustees passed, included identifying the Capital Projects Planning Committee as the committee that would be the one that we would be collaborating with. So that includes all stakeholders for City College, including labor. And I think it's important to mention that there. Okay, here's a minor one. Principle one, public realm principle one, the child care facility. I would just replace that child care facility with any child care facility.
Take any
thought
to any. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it. Oh, wait. Okay, so under urban design and neighborhood character, principle number two, A, it discusses the design of the site and buildings to integrate with respect and reflect local character, scale, design, and uses. And it mentions Westwood Park, Sunnyside, City College, and other nearby residences and schools. It also mentions prominent buildings on City College campus. So I'd just like to identify those prominent buildings on City College campus. And I would include the Pfluger Design Science Building with its classic details and the soon-to-be-built Performing Arts Center as maybe models of where they might go. And I could go on. Thank you very much for your patience.
Hi, my name is Christy Godinez. I am a resident of San Francisco, born and raised in Excelsior. I work at Lipover Dean High School. And I'll be short. One thing that this process has made me think about, like every time I'm here, is what can people do without? And I've started thinking a lot about basic needs, right, in order to survive. And some of those basic needs are housing, clothing, food. And so that's really where my priority has started to shift to housing, because that's the number one thing that I think that folks need in order just to get to the next level. The next level, right, is education. And then it's like to build self-esteem. If you think about Maslow, I don't know if any of you ever started studying Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So I really just want this group to, throughout the process, think about, like, what can we do without? I think all of these great, the public design and thinking about that is nice, but I'd much rather focus on what people need to survive.
Hi, I'm Robert Muehlbauer. I'm characterized as a long-term community resident. I guess I am, 37 years here in the Inglewood side. Came here to go to San Francisco State, got married, two daughters, came to City College on San Francisco State. Now I'm going back to City College. So these institutions are very, very important. I want to talk just briefly about growth. My comments are going to be more general. But I want to say that growth is going to come. I've been here 37 years, and it's going to come. And so the question to me is, can we manage it? Because if we don't manage it, what you get is more illegal dwelling units. People are going to continue to try to get here. Or, the new phenomena is boarding houses in residential neighborhoods. And I think that we need to come to grips with that. And the reason that they're there is we don't have enough affordable housing. So, when we talk about parking, too, the car is kind of our enemy. I mean, how many homes are there out here with garages that they're not used for parking? They're used for storage. There's a fellow on my block, husband, wife, three kids, five cars. And then they took the garage and created a bonus room. So now there's five cars on the street. So somehow this culture has to change. Just providing more parking, more parking, more parking is not the answer. We as a culture have to change our attitudes and use of cars. I know it's easier said than done. I think traffic congestion is just going to increase anyway, regardless of what happens. I mean, hopefully, City College's enrollment will go up 50%. There will be traffic and congestion as a result of that. How can we manage it? I like all the discussion about the transit demand management. I think it is, theoretically, something that really has a lot of promise. I mean, there's a lot of innovation in there and a lot of small pieces that if they work, it can have an impact. But even then, it's kind of guesswork when you come down to it. It's theoretical. When you apply it, it's guesswork. It might work. And it's even worse if it's not properly monitored and evaluated, etc. Then it just becomes, as I've said before, hocus pocus. It's just a shell game and, you know, it becomes meaningless after a while. And I think we need to be honest with ourselves. I don't think we're ever going to get to a place where we're going to have no impact. Impact is going to come. It's going to be part of our lives. I'm not ready to say no to no development out here, though. City College. I have previously said at these public meetings that traffic circulation is the most important thing. It's the elephant in the room. I'm going to take that back. I think City College is what really needs to be more intricately involved with this process. City College participation is crucial, and how can City College's master planning process become better linked to this development? When you step back and look at the macro plan, I mean, here's an opportunity. We are in the process of developing a master plan for housing. City College is in the process of developing a master plan for the for their campus for the next 30, 25, 50 years, who knows? But I mean, isn't this an opportunity, and are we missing an opportunity to not link them better together? The notion of creating a line and saying, this is the housing, this is the campus, I think that's kind of a recipe for failure. Somehow we have to create better self-interest, better motivation for City College to be intricately involved with this process. As it applies to housing, I've said before that 50% market rate housing defraying the cost of affordable housing, I think it's kind of clever. It costs a lot of money to build one unit of affordable housing. What is the number? 600,000? Big numbers. So if there's a way where you can build market rate housing and it helps build the affordable housing, the limited resources this city has for affordable housing might be used in other locations. And they're digging them up. You know, there's 100 units being proposed for the upper yard at Balboa Park Station. Mixed income housing also reflects the diversity of this neighborhood. We talk a lot about diversity, but we have economic diversity too. And the way this has been envisioned, I think, is reflective pretty much of this community. I also want to say that density doesn't have to be the enemy to good design. And if we just put a wall up and say density is bad, I think we're making a mistake. So I got a couple of what-ifs here. You know, what if the market rate units that are proposed to be built at the site were going to be used to build student faculty housing? I mean, isn't that a good trade-off? If there's going to be a little bit more congestion, wouldn't it be useful to have it linked to something that's a real public benefit to this community? So, how can we better tie the master planning processes together? I'd like to see that, and I think that might be the mechanism to get City College to be extra motivated to be part of the process, and not view this is my side, this is your side. That they are intricately linked, and the success of one depends on the success of the other. So as it applies to these development proposals, or pardon me, not development, the development parameters, this is the first step. We've done a good job, we've been here since January going over this 2, 3, 4 times on some of these parameters. I think it's time for us to see what it can yield. No, we don't know what the streets plans are. We don't know how many units. Let's see what the development community can come up with. We can say no at a later date. But let's see what comes. Maybe we have a knock-your-socks-off proposal out there. Maybe a developer will say to City College, let's be partners in doing a master plan for this new neighborhood that really fundamentally includes City College. So, those are my comments, and I'm really glad to have been part of this process. And I really want to thank everybody that comes out here, all these meetings, because this is what it's all about. This is our community. Thank you much.
So I'm going to actually read comments from Maria, since she couldn't be here tonight. She has back to school night tonight, and so I want to make sure that we knew this in advance, and so we wanted to make sure that her perspective was included as well. So a couple of things that she said is she wanted to make sure that in principle one, where they talk about the child care facility, not just as child care, but to actually have it reflect preschool, because there can be different forms of what that looks like, and we want to make sure that we keep taking ample. And then in principle number 3C, she wants to make sure that the community space is accessible to everyone. And I think there's been a lot of different things in the last couple of years
just locating available space for meetings and small events. So how do we really make that, you know, and I think when you begin to think about a development, you know, if you don't want it to be just that the people that live on the space will be the ones who use it. So how do we do that in a way that makes it accessible to everybody? I think that probably has, you know, from a developer perspective, that's an application probably would be more than just that. And then she said on transportation, if we could have some kind of spare of the air day that's exclusive only to City College, where Bartman and other modes of transportation are free, maybe once every 3 to 4 months a year, it might help with congestion to the college and aid students to find alternative modes of transportation that are affordable. So I mean, that's not necessarily a change to the perimeter, but it's a thought, it's a way to think about it. And then in principle number 4, in sustainability, she said that fruit trees may not be a great idea since there's a lot of little critters that inhabit our area. There are many little critters that inhabit our area, including squirrels, raccoons, and various birds. I like the idea of plants that are environmentally sound and indigenous to our area and are considered drought resistant. And those are her comments. I pass it to the audience.
Hi, I'm John Winston. I'm also one of the, like Howard, I'm one of the at-large members. So while I live in the neighborhood, I'm a 15-minute walk from here, I have to look at this project through the lens of the city as a whole. And the city has many times voted to increase housing, to allot money towards housing, and it's obviously a problem. We are all paying outrageous rents and mortgages. Most of us cannot afford to rebuy the houses that we already own if we own them. And if we don't own a house, the chances of buying a house in this town are pretty slim unless we're millionaires. So housing is the number one issue in this city. And so that's where we're coming from here. We're looking at some way to provide housing to the largest number of people in the way that will create the least amount of impact. And that's why I'm against using numbers for the amount of housing that we're looking at. I don't know if it's going to be 200 units, 500 units, 5,000 units. I just throw that number out there. But I don't want to look at numbers. I would like to see what we can do to help the most people and have the least amount of impact on the neighborhood and on the city as a whole. And for that same reason, I don't want to have prescribed particular things like how much parking we're going to have. I recognize that there are a large number of people, and we have quantified the number of people at City College who drive alone to school, who need to do so, and they need a place to park. There are also a lot of people that look at their community as a not a done deal, that they don't need to drive. They would prefer not to, but they feel it's the only way they can get to school. It's the cheapest way to get to school for a lot of people. And we need to look at ways to, on the demand side, to manage the demand, the transportation demand management of the school. So I would be against also prescribing the parking garage as part of the parameters. I'm not against the parking garage in general, but I would like to find out exactly how many trips you can divert, because an indoor parking garage costs between $50,000 and $70,000 per space. If you've ever been down to a Good Freaking Chicken building over on Mission and 30th Street, there's indoor parking in that building that costs $73,000 per spot. And if we were to replace one for one every parking spot in this reservoir, we'd be talking about $1 billion, 1,500 spots, 1,000 spots from our reservoir, and another 500 spots for the Performing Arts Complex. That's almost the size of the Mission Garage. So we really have to think other ways of providing ways for people to get to school and back. And so I would like to keep it misty on purpose, because I like to see the transportation demand management surveys completed. I like to have a real proposal from them. And I think it could be much more cost-effective to find other ways to get people. The whole thing is to get people to school and to get people in and out of their homes and to have less congestion on the streets. And I'll stop there with that. But I would also want to say that our communication with City College It said there was a change in the parameters to actually say that we'd like to be proactive in engaging City College in the planning of this project and in coordinating with the master plan. But that's a great sentiment, and I hope it happens. But I think we also have to, while we're planning is something that we consider to be virtuous, implementation is what's divine. And we have to really look at how we're going to make this actually happen. Because when I look at it right now, I see that the master plan already includes 4 garages, 1,500 spots, and there's a lot of buildings to go at Phelan and Judson, and another building to go at Phelan and Ocean, and the garage behind the garage behind the football stadium. They want to replace it 1-to-1. They haven't really considered so much what the TDM is proposing. It hasn't come out yet. So we really need to, anyway.
John, that's the context from, you're providing that from having gone to the master plan.
Yes, the master plan layout pretty soon. Point I'm trying to make is that we need to communicate well, we need to work together with the school, and I'm prepared to vote for the parameters as they are right now, with the provision that we look forward to really making it happen on the ground where the rubber meets the road. And I think that really can happen. Just, we have to really be vigilant.
Thank you. My name is Rebecca, and I'm an at-large member, also a member of the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission Citizens Advisory Committee, and so there is I occupy a dedicated seat who can speak to the San Francisco PUC ratepayers' perspective, because the property that we're discussing and having this conversation over is a property owned by SFPUC and paid for by SFPUC customers. I think it's important to note that I think we have operated a consensus-driven approach, and I'll remind folks that consensus does not equal unanimous agreement. I don't think we have unanimous agreement. Regardless of how many times you have attended these meetings, I think everyone, if you have only just attended one meeting, you see that there are many different perspectives and voices among the audience, as well as on this particular panel, this body. I myself have consulted with my fellow PUC CAC members. Like folks here, we've had some robust debates over the dedicated use of this PUC-owned property. I think what we have here in terms of the parameters are, I think they're within the ballpark of what is acceptable to those folks, to my colleagues on that other CAC. Again, we did not have unanimous agreement on every aspect of what's discussed and proposed. I think folks there would like to see, I will have to mention that, I'll be remiss without mentioning that, I think folks, we also had the same discussion of, is it should be at least be 50%, it's like 33% affordable, 33% to 50%, when we have that same conversation, I'll just point out that even there, the consensus was not unanimous. I myself, in a moderate income, I work full-time, and, you know, in full disclosure, this semester I became a half-time student at City College, so I'm living the experience of someone who has to truck over from my rent-controlled humble abode to come here after work. So this body has inspired me to do that, because I realize it's actually pretty accessible from BART, other than the necessary improvements of pedestrian safety that really ought to happen in a dimly lit pathway. I think that the transportation parameters, they do have incorporations of a lot of the issues we discuss around pedestrian safety, bicycle parking, electric vehicle charging, car sharing, bike sharing. And I think it's these tools that will be able to enable the communities to combat the challenges with congestion that's both present and potentially future.
So I think there's a lot of great things that have been said, but I'm generally comfortable with what we have arrived here so far. And so for those that's who are fans of City College, and I actually would encourage you to maybe there's a class you'd like to take, because I definitely am thoroughly enjoying my experience.
I'm Mrs. Canale, I chair the CAP, and I am an 8-year resident of Sunnyside. I'm a third generation San Franciscan. My grandparents were Italian immigrants living in dense housing when they first came to live in this country, and have great appreciation for that San Francisco is the dream for many people, and that's part of who we are, about being open, and I think Robert, to your point about even in our own neighborhood, the diversity of who we have here is pretty powerful. And I'm proud to be a San Franciscan. I'm going to make 8 comments. First, on page 19, where it talks about being in, this is Jennifer's question, the RDG guidelines, because the RDG guidelines are changing. We're going to strike being in accordance with the RDG guidelines, because we think it'll just muddy the waters, because this is going to be a specific project. It's principle 2D, situate and design buildings to enhance public spaces and the openness. And then in the third sentence is as per the San Francisco residential design guidelines, comma, minimize impacts. So we can strike the as per and just have it start with minimize impacts on privacy and life. Because right now, for those of you who are following this, the RDG guidelines citywide are changing that could actually impede this. And so, because this is a unique, talking with the team, because this is a unique project, this is going to have its own, the parameters are being laid out by us. So that should take care of any confusion that might come from there. The second thing is, I really feel this, I want to make sure that we do a good job of aligning the TDM work with the CCSF work. And the research, and that on an ongoing basis and every monthly meeting, we should start having an agenda item. So where are we? We've had the first 2 weeks of school, which is when we said we were going to do the counts. We'd love to see what those numbers look like, and I think we need to really, this needs to be a standing item to really understand where we are, what's going on with the TDM, what stage is it at, what are they looking at. I want us to have 100% transparency for this, because I feel like the TDM thing could be very helpful in helping us think about things, but if it's done without that sense of transparency, I think it mitigates the good that it can do. The good that it can do. My third point is, we had our SNA meeting on Sunday morning, and I made a comment saying, we call it a transportation hub, but it's not really a hub. It's a loose set of transportation things that all kind of happen, and if you're lucky, they are coordinated. And so the notion of it really being a network and really having, if we want this to be, we're transportation rich, but it's not well coordinated, and I'm very concerned, and people have heard me say this before, if we don't really fix this with the SFMTA, and where the SFMTA's involvement has got to be a part of this, this whole thing can go sideways, because we're all saying that, oh, we want to have it have a lot of public transportation. We're only going to build one parking space for every, the 0.5 ratio, right? Well, that only works if people, A, don't have cars, and if they don't have cars and they're not working with them, and if they're not going to be City College students or faculty or a member of the community, they're going to have to get there somehow. And if transportation does not work, they will drive, and that will impact the neighborhood. So I don't know how we elevate that, but I think that's got to be something for the CAC going forward that we are vigilant about, and really pushing the MTA to really saying, how are you doing a better job at this around coordination? Because otherwise it's not going to work. I echo the sentiment of many on the CAC who talked about the coordination with CCSF. I have scratched my head from the very beginning to say, how could we go a year ahead of the master plan that's 1 year behind us? And Robert, I love the idea of figuring out what would it really mean to have City College be integrated into the community instead of it being its thing of which some of us participate in things, but that we really see it as that we're really one community. And what would that look like if we were really to think outside the box and do that? Number 5, And, oh, and also with that, we have got to amp up this participation of City College. Bridget, we look to you, but it can't just be you. It's an unfair burden for you because there's so many pieces that are going on. So is it, you know,
I'm willing to make all the decisions.
I know you do. So, you know, is when we think about who the administration folks from CCSF need to be, is it Ron Gerhardt because of who he is and his role? Or how do we really think about that around getting key stakeholders, decision makers, to be a part of it, because otherwise it's not going to work. My fifth comment is, specifically for those who are here for the first time tonight, one of the earliest presentations you saw talked about how the skinniest piece of population that gets housing is middle class, and that we are only at 17% of what we should be at compared to market rate, which are 100%, and for very low income, we're at, I think, 40, we're much, much more better off because there's subsidies for. There's no way to subsidize middle class housing. And so the reality is that this 17-acre parcel allows us an opportunity to take the market rate housing and use the revenue, the excess revenue, so to speak, from that to actually offset the cost to actually create middle class housing. And that middle class housing is going to help us to keep families, to stay in the city, which we know is a huge problem, and it will allow us to keep our neighborhood integrity of being a community of families, which is a lot of who we are.
Community of, what did you say?
Families. My sixth point is, and I want to just underscore what my fellow Sunnysiders had to say, is that the one thing that the document doesn't do, and I don't know if we need to go back to the preamble and beef it up a little bit, is really talk more about the burden on the developer, around that this is not about this when this is built, that it's going to be the neighboring and surrounding communities that are going to absorb the negative impact. That we have to be able to think more proactively about, you know, if you're going to build this, you know, how do you do it in a way that's going to minimize the impact? And I think that doesn't come out as clearly as it needs to. And my last comment is that when, you know, I'm ready to move forward with this because this is a set of principles. And there are going to be a lot of trade-offs. If you want a 3-acre park, that might mean then you're going to have denser housing. There are five or six different variables that are going to be at play. We're not going to get everything. And so partially what we have to really think about is, you know, we put this out there and we see what developers come back with as ideas. And then when we see those ideas, then we'll be able to say, huh, okay, this is one way we can go. Or if we want this, this is the trade-off. Because I don't think that the 17-acre parcel can deliver everything that everybody in the room wants. And so I think it's going to be really important to see what actual ideas, concepts look like. And then the last thing I would say is that that these parameters are minimums and not maximums. There's a lot of sentiment in the audience that's rightly so from people that have worked with developers that will see this project as being they're going to do the minimum, the lowest common denominator. They're going to do the very least that they can do. I would suggest to you that if we continue to do the work that we do with the spirit that we've done it, you'll see that this isn't about doing the very least. So if it says it's it's 1.5 continuous acre park, and we've heard it a bunch of times, all these documents are public. If you came forward and you proposed a 3-acre park, might your bid be more advantageous? It's possible. So I think the way that we've done this, because it's had so much community input, that there's an opportunity for developers to think more competitively about what's going to make for a competitive proposal. And so with that, I'm looking forward to the next stage to really see what we're going to see as I don't know the terminology for it, but the beginning designs of what developers think are interesting approaches to this work. Because as I said all along, I don't know, I'm anxious to see if there's a developer who's even going to bid on it, because we've got so many different things. I hope so, I'm hopeful of it, but we put a lot of things in it, and we'll see if a developer thinks that they can make it work. So with that, what I'd like to do is we're going to take a 10-minute break. We'll come back. Actually, let's come back at quarter till, And at that point, the staff is going to respond to some of the open comments that have been made, and then we'll call for the vote. Thank you. Okay, we're going to get started. So we're actually going to start with a comment from Bridget. She's got one other thing she'd like to ask.
Thank you. I'm going to put on.
Hello? Okay, I just wanted to add one more general thing, and I'd like to thank Robert Milbauer for his comments about thinking outside the box and working with City College in this manner. And I also want to say, since we keep speaking anecdotally, and I keep saying we need to look at the data, I'll throw some anecdotal things out there too. I've been teaching for 23 years. I've noticed a trend among my students, and I've mentioned this before, even students from Los Angeles, who do not go get their driver's license the minute they turn 16 like I did. I grew up when the car was king in Los Angeles, and I did everything that everybody else did in LA at that time. But I noticed, and I think that the data will back me up here, is that there's more young people, more millennials that are not driving, that are finding alternatives. So when we look at this very complicated issue here, I don't want to think just in terms of me as someone well over the mid-century mark. Thinking in my terms of how I grew up, there's a change going on here, and I want to make sure that we can adapt to it. And the other big change is housing. And I think the housing issue for young people, when I talk to my students, you know, I feel very fortunate that I bought a house in San Francisco. I live here in San Francisco. That puts me in a completely different ballpark than many other people. And I know it's hard when you've had your house for a long time and, you know, you just cannot even understand what a big deal it is for young people now. They despair of ever owning their own house. And so to do this, I think, would be really something that would be very positive for the community also. As I mentioned, I'm looking at faculty housing. Can you imagine how that will invigorate the neighborhood around here? We might even be able to support a bookstore on Ocean Avenue.
Okay, thank you, Richard. So what we're going to do now, because the feedback is substantive, so we're going to pull up the magic of the projector. This is the these are the edits that we are being proposed. So we want to edit the preamble to make the developer responsible for addressing transportation and parking impacts. Edit the preamble to stress the importance of open space, that the child care facility should include preschool. Housing parameters, I think the housing parameters one, Bridget, that you had several spots where we wanted to make sure that City College was injected, and so we'll make sure to do that. We'll strike the residential guidelines in 2D. We'll cross-reference the issue raised by the City College Board of Trustees resolution, which will, and just to let everybody know, that resolution will be part of the packet that goes out as part of the RFQ. We will revise Principle 4 to reference City College community in addition to the administration in terms of who we're working with. And we'll also call out specific buildings, and that should be the PAC, should be PA, the Performing Arts and Education Center, PAEC. And then 4B and sustainability, we'll talk about really fruit trees are really only where they're appropriate. Revise the additional public benefits. And then to 3C, make sure that the community space is accessible to everybody. So I think that takes into account all of the feedback. Does that feel that it collects the thing? So what I'd like to do is, John, you have a comment? You can look at that? Okay. So what I'd like to do now then is I'd like to actually call for a vote. And so with the understanding that we will make these edits according to the document. So hold on 1 second. Too much paper. So with these changes to the document, preamble and the principles, the vote is the CAC, are you satisfied with the current version, including these revisions, of the development parameters to be included in the Balboa Reservoir RFQ request for qualifications and RFP request for proposals? So we'll take the vote. And I'll just pass the mic and we'll just...
Yes or no? Are you in favor?
Oh, just yes or no?
Yes.
By all
means,
yes.
And although there's been much progress, and I think that these are very good additions to the answers, so based on the reasons previously stated.
Yes.
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 Yes. Okay, so that would be 8 yes, 1 no. Okay, thank you.
7
yes, 1 no, and Maria's abstaining because she's not here. Okay, and her wish is that she wishes she could fit here, and her feedback was is that it was acceptable with the changes that she wanted. Okay, so now let's move to the next item, which would be, so now what happens? What's going to happen next? Is Supervisor Yee here? You're not here, Jen? Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So last week, we, at a high level, talked about the developer selection process, both the first step, the request for qualifications, and then the second step, the request for proposals. And today, we're going to go into more detail on that first step, the request for qualifications, now that the CAC has approved the parameters. We are in good shape to issue that first document to the community, to the development community. So I want to give people more of a preview of what to expect there. So first, just to review the whole process in developer selection, the first piece is the one that we've been working on with all of you, with the CAC and the community for the last year, which is writing these development parameters. So we reached that milestone. I'm resolving those today. They will be sent to the supervisors on the Board of Supervisors as a report, which is one of the things that is required in the ordinance that created the CAC. And then we will also attach them, of course, to the request for qualifications, which is the first step in the competitive process, which I'll go into more detail in a moment. But basically, the goal will be to determine a short list of qualified developers who can then participate in the next piece, the request for proposals, which is really where we're going to ask those shortlisted, most qualified development teams to spend a lot of time and money on a real proposal for their vision for what could happen at the site. Just briefly, that second piece is going to focus on the quality of what they're proposing, largely in terms of how well it adheres to the development parameters, and also whether it's feasible, whether it really is something that can get built and deliver on all of the things that we're looking for. All of those proposals are going to be presented to the community for feedback, and that will go into the selection panel's scoring. and that top scoring proposal will be selected to move forward. Before they can really get going, there's an exclusive negotiating agreement that has to get negotiated with SFPUC and approved by the SFPUC Commission. So now kind of zooming in on that first step, the RFQ process, just kind of walking through the steps that we're looking at in the next few months. In the next couple of weeks, we'll be working with SFPUC to create a website for the RFQ and the RFP so that all of the dates and materials and the information and opportunities to post questions and get answered are available publicly to everyone. We are still drafting, but hoping to be able to issue that RFQ, put it up on the website at the end of this month. And then typically, there's a few weeks after the RFQ gets issued for prospective developers to look at it, to start thinking about it, and to submit their questions in writing to us. And this is kind of the systematic process where the only questions that we will answer are the ones that are submitted to us by the deadline, and then they're answered in writing online so that everyone has access to all of the same information. So no one's getting answers to questions behind closed doors. Then after those answers to those questions are posted, there'll be another few weeks, a month or so, to finish, or for the development teams to finish putting their responses together. We're hoping that that deadline can be before Thanksgiving so that after people get back from the holiday, the panel can convene, score the submissions, the responses, and announce kind of the short list of top scorers that will be invited to participate in an RFP. So as I said, we have been working hard on drafting that document, and I just wanted to go through and kind of give an overview using our draft table of contents to start giving people an idea of what to expect. These are kind of pro forma, like typical things in typical city RFQs and RFPs for this type of opportunity. So the first thing is an executive summary. It's just summarizing some of the key things about the process and the site that we kind of want to have as a little cheat sheet. The project context, we'll talk about the location, the history, the physical characteristics. The development opportunity overview, we'll talk about the role of both the different city agencies that are involved, the different community groups, the CAC, and other stakeholders that are involved, and kind of what, at a high level, those different constituencies' objectives for the project are. Site conditions, we'll talk about the physical features, and in particular, the transportation and access conditions. There was a pretty long report that SFPUC commissioned from a consultant from AECOM when they first started this process. So we're going to link to that and expect developers to really read all of that to get the details. So this is the section that will reference that resource. Applicable land use policies. This is kind of a summary of some of the key policies on the list, in particular some things in the planning code that we want to spell out for prospective developers to be aware of as they start thinking about what is and is not allowed to be built here and kind of what policies govern that. The developer's role section is going to talk about kind of what the different approvals that they need to get will be. So first of all, getting the exclusive negotiation agreement approved by the SFPUC Commission right away. And then after the project details have been worked out and environmental review has taken place, all of the other approvals and boards and commissions that the various ordinances will have to go through. There is going to be an overview of the development parameters, and in particular talking about the comprehensive process that we've gone through, that the CAC and the community have gone through to create those parameters. And then you'll see the full parameters will then be attached. The transactional terms are kind of things that we think developers will need to start thinking about in evaluating whether this is a feasible project for them to undertake as they start thinking about kind of the costs involved. So, you know, we're going to stress that the affordable housing piece and the fact that it is expected to be affordable in perpetuity, highlighting some of the major project costs that hopefully people will know about, but just to really make sure they think about all of the impact fees that are going to be owed, all of the different kinds of operating costs that they're going to be responsible for on an ongoing basis. And there are also some terms that SFPUC asked us to be sure to highlight in terms of, you know, they have pipelines underground on the southern portion of the site, and so want to be sure that you know, those are protected so that they continue to serve the city. Okay, then the RFQ schedule. I have another slide that will kind of go through the different steps. I guess I already just went through that slide. So that's the RFQ schedule. We'll go, that'll be presented at the table, zooming in on very specific dates and times when each of those milestones have to be hit, when each of those submissions or information is due. And then submittal requirements, so really listing kind of the different documents that we're expecting. So like including profiles of projects that speak to a developer having applicable experience and exactly kind of what project attributes those profiles should include, those types of requirements. Selection process will take the schedule that was summarized earlier and actually explain kind of what each step in that schedule entails. And then the selection criteria will outline the different things that the scorers will be scoring these proposals against and actually assign different numbers of points and kind of a scoring rubric and guidelines for how to evaluate each of those criteria. And then as exhibits, we're going to keep it pretty simple. The first exhibit will be a property map showing exactly what the property being offered is. The second exhibit will be the full development parameters, including the preamble. The third exhibit will be the City College Board of Trustees resolution, where the Board of Trustees directed the administration on kind of what the college's priorities and positions are for influencing this project and working with us on this project going forward. And then the last one is the document that Kate referenced, which is a list of all of the relevant policy standards and codes. And that is, you know, when we provided the drafts of each section of the parameters, there was kind of a resource section, in each of those draft memos. And each of those resource sections listed different policy standards and codes that were, like, you know, related to sustainability for the sustainability memo. And so we've consolidated all of those into one list. So that is the document. And the next thing that I want to go over is who's going to be on the evaluation panel for the RFQ. Last time we talked about the kind of diverse group of city agency representatives bringing kind of different expertise. So having a representative from SFPUC, from the planning department, from OEWD, the Office of Economic and Workforce Development, from the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development, which are our affordable housing gurus, and from SFMTA. And, you know, after that, we got feedback around something that we've been doing a lot of thinking around already, which was how to make sure that the community was represented beyond the parameters and all of the kind of information in the document and the criteria speaking to our process. And so we would like to have a City College representative and a CAC representative on the panel. And so for City College, we have been in contact with the facilities folks and Linda Da Silva, who is the new capital planning lead at City College. And we're proposing for the CAC, this was a tough one because, you know, you all represent different constituencies within the CAC, and so we thought it would be most appropriate to have the CAC chair, who really is kind of the uniting force that brings all the interests together, to be the CAC representative on that panel. So finally, just kind of going through the evaluation criteria, this is somewhat of a review from last time, but there are kind of three key buckets in this first piece that's really about trying to evaluate which teams, which developers are most qualified. So really breaking it up into experience, which is looking at what they've done before in terms of not just what types of projects they've done, but how they have worked with communities and worked with cities and public agencies to get that done. Capacity, so looking at their ability to execute based on both ability to secure funds and secure capital and having the right qualified people on their team. And then finally, development vision. So asking teams to propose a really high-level vision just to see how they're starting to think about the site and the parameters. Not a full-fledged proposal, but kind of a reality check to see that they're going in the right direction in terms of not just understanding and meeting the parameters, thinking creatively about how to exceed them, being serious about the housing crisis, and being realistic in terms of moving in a direction to propose something that's feasible. And finally, we had a question last time about what the next step, the RFP evaluation criteria will be. We haven't written the RFP yet, but looking at kind of examples of, again, typically how these RFPs are structured for other large city projects and what we'd like to see, we see it kind of breaking out into three main areas. Responsiveness to the RFP's objectives. You know, that can mean different things for different projects. Here, it's the development parameters. The character and the quality of the design. So at the RFP stage, we do expect the teams to really start thinking about what the design, the look, the feel, the scale of the project will be, and then also, again, making sure that it's financially feasible. Just to conclude, putting our timeline slide up, again, we have been going for a while, and this next step is a milestone, but we have a ways to go even after that. You know, the developer will be selected, hopefully approved through the exclusive negotiation agreement approval by the SMPUC Commission. And then we all come back and they iterate through a design and development proposal. It has to go through environmental review, and then finally, several years later, hopefully, we'll go to a series of boards and commissions for approval. Thanks.
Thank you, Emily. So I'm going to actually, if you have questions or comments, I'm going to actually have to pause up for a second. Supervisor Yi is here, and he was scheduled to speak right before this item, so Supervisor Yi can have that.
Thank you. One of the things, I really wanted to be here to thank this committee for what you've done. This has been a long road. I know that over a year ago when we started this process, there was some desire to fast forward as much as possible. this whole process, and I said, you know, slow down. Let's have the community have a voice in this. Not only are you part of the community that's lending a voice, but you've allowed for, I think, at least 16 meetings for the community to come and voice their opinion. And that was really my hope when I created the CAC, to make sure that regardless of where people stood in terms of their opinions, at least it's going to be heard in a way that we can actually hear it. And I think that's been done. I think the end product is one of these where it's a consensus. It's a, you know, where people on either side of, or many sides of this equation may say, well, I wish it were more like this or more like that. But for me, when I watched this unfold, it was a good process for me to see that people were listening, things were moving around. It was, one would think that it was set 6 months ago, but things have changed. One would have thought 3 months ago was set, things have changed. And so in a way, I've seen other CACs operate in the city, and this CAC, the way you really function, is such a night and day compared to other ones I've seen. So I'm here to not only compliment, you know, the community for being here also at the 16 meetings, but really for you to be able to absorb and basically try to, sometimes it's difficult, but you made it, you listened. And I think, you know, the product that we have, it was really hard work, and anybody would acknowledge this is hard work. And I think what we'll be faced with now is this is the mark of getting to a particular step. And for maybe CAC, the hardest work has been done, but you're going to continue working on it. And I think we're going to really need the community to continue their presence is once there's a developer that's selected, so we can really work with the developer to get as much as we can into this project to benefit as many of the neighborhoods around here as possible. So I want to keep it simple, and I know you have other things to talk about. So I just want to thank you. I also want to thank the staff that's also been flexible in working with the community. Thank you very much.
So what I'd like to do is I'd like to go to CAC discussion and then public comment on what we just heard. I'm going to start. I've got one piece of feedback. On the page where it talks about actually, can you pull the document up on the book? You can go to the page that talks about the, it's near the end, sorry, my memory isn't, I'm not 21 anymore. The page that talks about this page. The fourth bullet point under experience, I think we need to reword this. I do not like this at all. I think it should read ability to work effectively with community throughout the process. I want it to be proactive. I don't want it to be reactive to address that you're addressing community concerns. We're trying to put something forward to say this is what we want the project to look like, and we're working together. I want us to have a spirit of not an us and them, or we're going to have to raise a concern and they're going to address it. I want it to be proactive, and I want us to have a spirit of we're in this together as a collective community, and I think that needs to be rewarded in a way that really, and I really think that also needs to come out in both rounds of the RFQ and the RFP around. This is not your average planning process, because we have a large group of people that are involved, and we plan on staying involved.
Yeah. So, sure. But to clarify, that particular bullet refers to looking at how they've worked with communities in the past and how effectively and willingly they have responded to communities.
So maybe in that you have to frame the question, or how you talk about it is not just how they've addressed community concerns, but have they proactively worked on the front end as well, because I think that's going to be important. So I open it up to the rest of the group of people who have feedback. Yeah, probably.
In the RFQ,
RFP process. You talked about developing a short list. Is there, can you talk about that a little bit more? What does a short list look like? Is it three developers, five,
one?
I mean, I want to make sure that we don't get ourselves to a point where this is a lot of stuff in these parameters here. And we could be looking at a situation where developers go, no, that's poison. I don't want to deal with it. So I don't want to be in a position where we're looking at one proposal. You get a roof, you get three bids. You do plumbing work, you get three bids. I'd like to see a range of three proposals in front of us. It makes them all competitive, and I think it makes for better development in the end run.
So we're shooting for three, and that is kind of one of the details that is in our draft, provided that there are three that are truly qualified.
I just want to ask a little, Kate, I just had to ask a little bit more about the community process and what that's going to look like. Have you already scoped that out? Do you have ideas? And how long a process is that going to be? Is it going to be, what is the involvement actually going to be?
Okay.
Okay.
So, you know, of course, the first step in the community process was writing these rules with the parameters. And, you know, typically that's kind of what it's limited to in these selection processes, and then the community gets involved later on once the developer's on board. We wanted to find a way to do more than that, and so I think the two main ways that we want to do that is through the RFQ and RFP panel, and actually having community representation on those panels. And also, once the proposals come in through the RFP, to have an opportunity for community feedback that would entail actually having presentations, so inviting each of the proposers to come and present in a community forum, whether it's technically the CAC that hosts it or another group that hosts it and invites kind of all the other stakeholder groups. And so kind of live at that meeting would be an opportunity to hear feedback, and also written feedback could also be submitted. And the idea would be that all of the panelists would attend those meetings and hear that feedback and the criteria that they would need to kind of rate the proposals based on would include kind of how well, you know, how responsive to, or what kind of, I guess, how responsive to the parameters, but also kind of based on the feedback and how positive it was that they were hearing.
So I'll be in public meetings and publicly noticed and...
Oh, yeah.
Other questions?
Can you go to the slide that shows like who's going to be on the actual?
Yeah.
I was just curious, and I don't know if this is possible, but I feel like I've seen a lot of faces here that have come to these meetings. Do you ever have somebody directly from the community on this room? So I see that you have like a city college representative, somebody from the CAC. Is it ever typical to choose somebody in the group that's been coming to all? Because I know you take attendance.
I'm not aware that that has ever been done. I think what we are trying to do is find people who kind of are representative of as broad of constituencies as possible. So, you know, the idea of having, you know, a city college representative who is in tune with kind of what they're hearing from throughout the city college community, having a CAC representative who, you know, has really been listening to all of the different perspectives and can kind of put them together.
Just a thought, because it's, you know, I think that I know we've all given our time, but I've also seen a lot of people here over and over again, so I'm going to think about it.
Can you outline maybe the role of the CAC as we move forward in this process?
Yes, absolutely.
Maybe more meetings.
Yes, and then, you know, and I want to kind of largely defer to Lisa on that, but I will say that the legislation, the ordinance that created the CAC outlined kind of two very discrete roles. The first one was advising the city and advising staff on the parameters, which we finally done, but there's another really big role also, which is continuing to be the kind of the convener and the body and the for community feedback as the developer comes on board and kind of presents the project as it's evolving. And for that role to continue up until the project goes through its final approvals at the PUC Commission, the Planning Commission, the Board of Supervisors, all of that.
So we will continue to be a clearinghouse for the community, even if not each person from the community doesn't get to be present at these high-level meetings. We will still be able to have a forum where everybody can be heard.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'll respond to that because it goes to an item that's at the end of the our agenda. To hit it now is that what we want to do is, Phil, can you put the slide up that's the one where it shows how far we still have to go with the timeline? Where we're just one little rectangle that we completed.
So we're just kind of getting, yeah, so it's kind of above that, right? Right in there.
Yeah. So what I think we really want to do is we want to think about ongoing meetings and figuring out, are they monthly or are they 2 months? But as we, and I think what we want to do, we want to be able to map out the next steps in the process and then say, where do we need the community input around different items and making sure that we're being engaged? And something that I mentioned at the very, very beginning of the meeting is, I also want us to be able to use these meetings as an opportunity for us to be able to come together as a collective community to learn more about our neighbors. So I'd love for us to be able to have a really good presentation from City College to really hear who's going to school, what are the most popular majors, how many faculty, like to really understand what's happening, what are the greatest challenges other than what we know, which the challenges are like, what, you know, what's going on at the college. For Sunnyside to be able to say, this is what's going on in the Sunnyside community, here are the things that we're dealing with as a community, these are the things we care about, this is what we stand for, and being able to do that perspective by perspective, and probably something, Rebecca, it'd be interesting to see something about PUC kind of larger to talk about, perhaps some of the other land that they own and other projects that they're doing to kind of have better context. The intention being is to actually to continue to build community, because it is only through the stronger our connective tissue is to one another, the better we're going to be able to continue to work together as we continue to work on this project, because we really have only just begun, and I think this notion of, I think the community meeting that we're going to have where we have a chance to see the three top three, which is, you know, optimistically, then we'll have three to review. That process is going to be very important, that we have really good community input, that it's more than just the people in this room, but the larger communities that we all represent, so we really have a chance to have good feedback on the designs. And that's going to require us to do our job very well as representatives and to work with our local, whoever we represent, to make sure they're well-educated about how the charrette's going to work, so that when people show up and they come to it, people are educated when they come in. So it's not like, what are we doing? I don't understand, because this is a very sophisticated thing in some regard. Or not sophisticated, even, it could just be unknown, because most people have never done this. So the intention is to continue to use this body for communication, education, and creating cohesion among between us as a larger collective neighborhood. So I think that's it. Rebecca, do you have any questions?
I like what you just said, because there's so many different groups out there doing different things, and then there's this nexus.
That's it.
You like it. Okay. So anything else? Any other questions? And I think what we'll continue, and then we're going to open up to public comment. But one last thing I would say, too, is that we continue to use the website as a way to continually articulate exactly. So, for example, this presentation will go. Or this presentation will go up on the website, right? There was just a snafu with the topic being off the website. And then we'll just continue to be incredibly transparent with everything we do. And you know, it's probably going to be a page for community to understand what is an RFP, what is an RFQ. Taking, and so we'll have resources so that everyone will be able to continue to do outreach to their individual and our collective community, so people are educated along the way. Because I do think one of the things that's been hard, I'll speak for myself personally.
Lisa?
I'll speak for myself personally by saying that one of the hardest things was to understand what a parameter or a principle is, and how does that feed into the RFP, like the whole process. It's not what I do for a living, right? So
I think if we can make it a level playing field, the very best way to do that is to make sure that everybody understands in the simplest language possible how, you know, what this next phase is, how it's going to work, how to be prepared when you come to this meeting, and so on and so forth. Okay. So with that, I'd like to open it up to public comment. You're going to be public comment, Stan. How it works in this meeting is Rita's going to be the first step, and then go stand next to the, under the clock, and make a new line.
Okay. My name's Rita Evans, and I've been a resident of Sunnyside since 1987. While I personally believe that certain city departments and agencies are indeed pockets of developers, I in no way think that that accusation applies to the members of this CAC. And I want to thank you for the many hours that you've put into this. I've been on a CAC, and I know what a thankless, time-consuming, uncompensated task it is. So I really want to acknowledge that and thank you very much for what you're doing.
Good evening, members of the board. My name is Steve Martin Pinto. I'm the president of the Sunnyside Neighbors Association, as well as a firefighter for the city of San Francisco and a veteran of the Iraq and Afghanistan War. Also a five-generation San Franciscan as well. Just want to voice a few concerns that I have, and maybe you're addressing it, maybe not, I don't know. Just want to like point out some things that I've kind of learned over the years. So back in the 1920s, when the M line and the L line were built, there were tracks that went to nowhere. Okay. After that, the neighborhoods filled in. The point of this I'm trying to make is we'd be remiss if we didn't consider traffic first and then development second. If we do the opposite, we're setting ourselves up for disaster. It's been done, I think, in a lot of other cities and suburbs, maybe such as LA, where they plan for development first and traffic was an afterthought, and the results were disastrous. Traffic jams like no other. The other thing, too, I want to mention is I know a lot of millennials rely on bikes for transit and all that, and like myself, if I want to go anywhere in the city, I just hop on Uni or walk there. However, that's for intra-city transit. For intercity transit, if I want to go visit my mom in Fairfield or my dad in Walnut Creek, I have my car, my truck, and I need that. So to plan for housing without consideration to parking is not a good thing. I think we need to really plan for that, even for the millennials like myself. The other thing I want to mention, too, is I know that one of the board members spoke about the hierarchy of needs and how we should focus our maybe the design of these houses or homes based on the bare minimum of the hierarchy of needs. Maybe I misunderstood that, but I think if we design the housing, okay, just with the bare minimum in mind, we're selling ourselves short. For me, as a kid growing up in the city, I would go to my grandparents' house, and they live right next to Glen Canyon, and I had the fortunate experience of going to the creek with my cousins and playing in the creek and catching catfishes and all that stuff. And to me, it kind of informed my my views today of nature and appreciation for the natural beauties of this city. So if we don't, and it was important for my development as a kid, and I think if we don't do that for our kids that are going to live here, we're not doing them a service. Thank you.
I just want to remind people that this is feedback to the, it's fine, Steve, but for this feedback comments to what we the recommendation is written in the law. Okay, thanks.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Randolph from the Ingleside. I just have a couple questions about the mechanics of the RFQ process. In the RFQ evaluation criteria slide, it seems like 70% of the criteria is how big is the company. And I'm just wondering, do all the applicants need to be really big companies?
Phil, can you go that slide, please?
Well, yes, it's one that says that 35%, I don't know if it's percent, but it looks like 70% of it is how big is the company. Do all the applicants need to be really big companies? And how many developers could possibly qualify? Do we have, if it's restricted to really big developers, do we have a list of them? Or is there, you know, a way for smaller developers to enter the market? And for example, for similar size developments, do we have an estimate of how many people applied, how many developers applied, for instance, at SageLock? Another question that I have is in the timeline. Some of the commenters last month expressed concern that we would that we're wasting the EIR, the Environmental Impact Report, from the Balboa Park Station area plan. So, to...
Can we go to the council the side of the side, please?
So I want to give voice to these people who are worried that we're wasting the Balboa Park Station Area Plan, EIR, and ask, is there any scenario in which there would not be an environmental impact report necessary for this development? You know, if the development was, you know, below a certain size or something like that, would we not need an EIR? And finally, a question I have is for the once we're in an exclusive negotiation phase, what leverage does the city have? You know, when we say, build me a green, I mean, we need a green roof too, do they just say, okay, add $5 million, build me this, add this much dollar, I mean, this much money. Do we have any, you know, leverage there? Thanks.
Sure.
Okay.
The staff will respond to questions after
Hi, my name is Chris Peterson, resident of the Eagle Side. My main response is to that timeline there. It's looking likely under this projection, nothing's going to happen on the ground for maybe 5 years. And my perception of city projects is the initial estimates of how long they take is virtually always a gross underestimate. So I hope in planning out the procedures to follow, people really take into account how long it takes to do procedure after procedure after procedure after procedure. There's a real significant cost to delay, so I hope thought is given to, well, maybe it might be good to study this, that, have this extra hearing, that adds time, and there'll be a cost to that. So I hope that's your consideration. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Theodore from Excelsior. So I was wondering, when we get to the request for qualifications and proposals, typically how many proposal alternatives do the developers present, and like and how much leeway do we give them to perhaps violate some of the design constraints that we have here? Like personally, I would still really like to have much higher height limits than what we have in the document. Would any developer be free to like at least propose it and show how many people, how many units would we be losing by sticking to these current height limits? I remember that terrible drawing from that architecture student a year ago that showed like giant skyscrapers. Pretty sure we're not going to do that, but would a developer be able to show a more tasteful design that technically doesn't meet the criteria?
Laura Frogs from Park. Emily, last meeting we talked about the scoring rubric for the RFQ and the RFP, and you responded about the RFQ, but you didn't answer about the RFP, whether that would be made public and how we would see once we made. And you mentioned today that the community feedback will go into the scoring, and how is that community feedback calculated, and how much or in what way is that part of the scoring?
Hi, I'm Dave Tejeda. I'm the guy that's lived here since the last century, like some of you. Thank you for all your time. The deal is, as we talked about, nothing, shovels are not going to hit the ground for at least 5 years. The thing is, some of the issues I've talked about that I believe are beneficial is like improving immunity and all these things to make things work better for this are what's classified as operational. I don't know the right wording, but it's operational rather than actual changing of structures and whatever. And those things could all be improved so that we could show that it can work, that the public transportation can work, because this is a hub. And this school was put here back when it was a prison because it was at the end of the whatever streetcar lines. And it is based upon public transportation. So I'm hoping we can keep going that way. And once again, thank you all for working very hard.
Harry Bernstein, City College faculty. Just a couple things. I appreciate the, I forget what you, constituency you represent. So I appreciate your comment that the interested community members don't have any people in this room right now, but there'll be a larger participation in the RFQ evaluation team. You know, when you mentioned, when she mentioned the sources of membership, I couldn't tell exact numbers, but there were lots of city staff, as there have been city staff, one representative from the college, one from another place. It seemed the city staff was the overwhelming part, and I'm not sure about the fairness or aptness of that. Another thing, Ms. Lusk noted that the principles and parameters have been accepted. And Mr. Jaw was here earlier, and he asked for separate approval on your part of the preamble and the principles and parameters. So I'm not sure, have you approved everything yet, or is that set up for a future time? I agree with the speaker who said, work out the transportation first rather than focusing on the development. And then I have a question. I remember last year it was made clear that the reservoir property has not been made declared surplus yet. I haven't heard a word about that. I'd like to know, when is the lower reservoir site to be declared surplus, and what, if any, are the implications and consequences of such a status? Does that make that property open to other other uses or other, I don't know. I just haven't heard.
Any last public comments or questions? So Emily, you want to, and then Rebecca, you can respond to the very last question.
Okay, so the first question was about whether you need to be a really big company to apply and whether there's opportunities for smaller developers to get involved. You know, I would say that this is such a large project that's going to take a lot of money and a lot of expertise to do. And we typically see, you know, a large developer on the team with that kind of experience and with that kind of access to capital to really realistically be able to do it. But it's also common to form joint venture partnerships that bring, you know, often nonprofit developers, affordable housing developers, and just kind of smaller local teams in to the table. So I think it's unlikely that we would see a small developer trying to go it alone and actually meet the experience and the financial capacity qualifications. But as part of a team, that's certainly where the opportunity lies for that.
And Emily, when you say given the parameters around what we want in the housing stock, it is probably likely that it will be a joint venture because the
the specific skill set and acumen required around affordable housing is different than market rate housing. And, you know, when they think about where all the projects have been done, you've got Mercy Housing, you've got, you know, you've got something like that that's a part of it because of what they know, because it's unique.
So the second question was about whether there will be another EIR in addition to the Belleville Park Station Area Plan EIR that already took place. And the answer is that there will be full environmental review of whatever is proposed here. The Belleville Park Station Area Plan EIR, that environmental review, was program level environmental review. When there's a specific project, if, no matter what is proposed for it, there is project level environmental review. And what exactly what kind of environmental review would be determined at the time when the project is scoped and proposed. There's a question about, you know, once there's an exclusive negotiating agreement, what leverage does the city have? And it's a lot of leverage because the city, the various boards and commissions have to approve the project. There's no ability to get building permits and actually build the project unless it gets all of those regulatory approvals from some very political bodies. There was a question about whether developers can present different alternatives, how much deviation there can be. I will say that, you know, often when you look at what types of proposals come back, often they do include kind of a menu of different alternatives, kind of showing what the trade-offs would be. We're not asking for that, but often we get it, even if we don't ask for that. So I would not be surprised if we saw some of that. You know, my personal opinion is that if it didn't include a very strong alternative that was compatible with the parameters and all of the objectives, you know, if I was proposing, that's probably not what I would do. Laura had a question about the RFP rubric, and we heard her last time, we just haven't focused on it yet. You know, I provided a broad overview of kind of what the considerations would be. We will plan, you know, when we actually draft that document, we'll come back to you and give you a more detailed description of exactly what's in it and how this form works.
That's a great example, too, of something that's going to be on a future agenda.
Yeah.
So as I think we plan out the meetings and we do the project plan for it, we'll be able to say, what are we going to do and bring to the CAC this month, or what are we going to do to the community this month? That's a great example of the ongoing use of the CAC.
And finally, it is correct, the PUC Commission has not made official surplus property findings yet. We'll need to consult with them to understand exactly when that will happen, but that isn't, you know, that's a PUC Commission action that happens at one of their public hearings.
And it's not a big deal. Jerry's concern is, could somebody else come in or whatever? This is being done in conjunction with the PUC. This work is being done with the PUC, so it's not like there'll be any surprises. It's normal that it hasn't already been made.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
No, it's too premature.
Yeah. You know, there's a whole process and a lot of work that they need to go through to kind of dot all the I's and cross all the T's.
Rebecca,
I just wanted to clarify that the real estate management team, the unit within SFPC that's in charge of overseeing facilities and real estate holdings, have been paying a lot of attention to the discussions happening here. And I think, you know, I can't obviously cannot speak for the PUC commissioners, but I do know that at the time when something is in need of the vote, that's basically the last chance to, the last opportunity to declare surplus property. So they can either just do it as a transaction approval combo and declaration in one meeting, or they can do it separately, and I haven't heard an indication what they prefer, but my take is that it's probably not anytime soon, because I'm sure they also want to see that, you know, if a property, if their property is deemed to clear surplus, that they want to see that whatever the you know, whatever we're putting, the development and the parameters are also in line with what their likings and whatnot. So it's probably not going to be a very quick process.
That also might be something too to come back as a standing agenda item as a status update on that. Might be one of the things to continue to get updated for the stands or yeah, okay, good. Okay, so thank you. Thank you for your questions. I think I'm just gonna sing the song again of transparency and that everything that we do is open and the rubrics and everything we do and the processes I think are basically really important for us to have it be open so everybody understands and knows how it's going to work. So the fifth item on the agenda is a quick one, which is, and I think we probably said this already a couple of different ways, is making sure that we have good ongoing coordination among CCSF, the TBM, the OF participation plan, and this group. And I think that there are planning roles that you're already attending a lot of these meetings, but I think we're going to have to step up our game a little bit in terms of us as a CAC, in terms of our coordination and working, because it's going to be really important that this be more tightly organized and coordinated as it becomes more and more real. So Emily, I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Provide information on kind of the coordination that's already happening on the staff level, and I think a lot of that does happen between agencies and between colleagues, but I think what you're talking about is probably a little different.
And I think it might even be good to have a portion of or a page of the website that's got updates, so if there's been a meeting of the charrette that's working on the master plan at the college, that information and those updates are there so that people can have access to it.
Did she answer about the panel? More people on the panel.
More people on the panel. The question was, could we have more people on the RFQ panel?
I think kind of based on, sorry.
So we've talked some about the process in the past, and I think Emily did a good job of outlining what's become a lot more detailed. But what I want to come back to is I feel like the community input into what the RFP document is and then the community's ability to provide specific feedback on proposals during the process is fairly unprecedented. There aren't many situations where the city has had that deep a community involvement. So we felt by augmenting that with a member of the CAC, which has convened and heard all of these discussions, was a way to further put that into the scoring process. I think our concern with expanding the pool is the slippery slope of, is this constituency, Sunnyside and Westwood are represented but not the Ingleside, and suddenly it's a slippery slope beyond that. Whereas we feel like by adding those two specific seats, it's not just what is typically a landowner's panel. Because there are conflicts of interest where the panel is supposed to be a fiduciary to make the transaction work. We feel like this is a mix that makes sense based on the process that's been laid out.
Okay, so now what I'd like to do is go to general public comment. General public comment, any comments?
Answering the problem with Westwood Park. I was reviewing the responses to parameter comments and questions, and I did not see my question nor the answer to what the Balboa Station Area Plan environmental impact report cost. And I understand that was not the site specific, for this site, but I did ask the question and I don't see it listed or answered. So is that still being investigated? What was the cost of the environmental impact report for the 2009 station area plan? And it would be interesting to know also, just in general, if you're looking for that data, what the whole plan cost. I couldn't find that information. So. I think it must be public knowledge, isn't it?
There's staff time.
Oh yeah, I mean it had to be a huge expense, so it must have have some counting for that somewhere, I would think.
Sorry, I can't hear you guys.
They can pull the consultant contract. I think the staff time is going to be hard to do because you don't allocate your time by hour, right? No, I'm not saying that's requesting staff time. Yeah, I'm just asking for the, you know, what the environmental impact of work costs and what the plan costs. Thank you.
I'm Simon Hansen.
You can
hold
it up.
Yep. Simon Hansen, resident of the Excelsior, faculty at City College. I'd just like to respond to having shown up to the very first one of these meetings and now to this point that we are now. I thank you all for your service. I know what type of service this is. It's onerous. The city has been so efficient in the development process in moving things forward with having all of your ducks in alignment to get this to development. I have had experience where I've seen many of these go forward. And really the secret is get it to a developer, and the developer is not going to do this without profit. We know that. That's what the developer is coming. That's why the question is about the size of the developer. However, what you're dealing with is a public resource. So when they ask and say, are you representing the community? It's not fiduciary responsibility. Your fiduciary responsibility is to me who pays the taxes, to the public utilities of which it is me who is the public. So having that unprecedented input into what's happening in a financial transaction is warranted in this case, particularly because as soon as the developer comes in, then there is a possibility that under an exclusive agreement, you're going to negotiate down that property that has what percentage of affordable versus what percentage of free. So I really appreciate that you, as the committee, are raising the issues of, is there going to be greater community representation throughout the process? Because here in the city, we've had a lot of things, especially where my heart and soul is in this process, with City College, where the doors have closed and things have gone away. And they've gone away because people have had the ability to make deals, and the people who have made the deals are the same people that you're negotiating with. So there is a reason why to open up to a greater community involvement. Thank you.
It just hurts too much.
Simon's a little taller than I am. Ellen Wall, City College and Sunnyside Neighborhood. I find it awesome that y'all put all this time in, but I, for one, didn't appreciate it because people have come up here time and time and time again and said, don't build this project, don't do this, and yet the parameters that were just passed took in none of the problems that neighbors got up and suggested, that problems built mainly around City College and traffic and parking. And so I don't know why you passed it. I really admire Westwood Park for having a representative who represents them, and I wish I had somebody who represented me. And I wanted to, since Norman Yee is still here, I wanted to tell him this did not represent me and many people that sat meeting after meeting trying to say, no, please don't do this. Take instead help City College. Thank you.
Though CCSF facilities manager is new and we greet her with optimism, there is a structure and history that precedes her. Please do not sanctify and open the door wider for more intertwining of the Mayor's Office of Workforce Development into the future of City College. When City College was taken over by the state, a takeover encouraged by Mayor Ed Lee, a host of administrators were inserted into the state, inserted by the state into the bedrock of the school. These are the people who have been meeting since the takeover with the mayor's office, SF Planning and SFPUC with zero transparency. Emily Lesk would likely be able to give you more details about these meetings because she has been coordinating their logistics since before the time that former City College VP of Finance, Mark Zakovich, first mentioned these meetings to Harry Bernstein and the community finally learned about them. Because your meetings and their tasks have been directed by the Mayor's Office of Workforce Development and will likely continue to be directed by the city team, I am vehemently opposed to a greater increase of influence by the Mayor's Office on City College now via the school's master planning process. The school's minimized community is already struggling for input into this process. If you really want the participation of City College, this is absolutely not the way to achieve it. The CAC should consider meeting with the department chairs. They are elected by the faculty who run their departments. They are in the classroom teaching, and they do a huge share of the administrative work at the school. None of the department chairs have been invited to a single meeting of the City College meetings. Thank you.
They don't want an open meeting.
Hello, I'm Jonathan Randall from the Ingleside. Thank you to all of the CAC members for your steadfast patience. I want to give somewhat of a counterpoint to those of us who, from my neighbors who say that the CAC does not represent them because they, because we have parameters for housing. There are other neighbors who do recognize that the city does really, really need housing and that it's a critically important problem in the, for the health of the future generations of our city. I think Lisa had a very good question when she asked, would you be able to buy the house that you live in today if you were, you know, 20 years younger today in similar situations? And for a lot of... And, you know, I think if all of us were honest and asked ourselves that question, you would understand that this housing crisis is pricing out people of our similar situations as ourselves. And this is a big problem in our city. And, you know, and similarly, would you sell your house to somebody who's in a similar situation as you if you, you know, if you moved out? Because we're all, you know, those of us who own houses are somewhat speculators whenever we sell a house to somebody for a net profit when incomes aren't growing in net. Anyway, thank you for your comments, or thank you for your listening.
Good evening. I'm Steve Martin Pinto, president of the San Jose Neighbor Association. I just want to mention a few things. So the city of SF has about 850,000 people crammed within 46.7 square miles, which equates to about 17,000 people per square mile. Compare that to Oakland, 8,000 people per square mile. Daly City, 12,000. Berkeley, 10,000. Richmond, about 3,300 people per square mile. We have to realize something. That we're never going to be able to satisfy everyone's need to live in the city. It's just not going to happen. That being said, what is the city government doing to help out in leaving what's in reality a regional-wide crisis of housing? We can only do so much. So, although I'm not against this project by any means, I just want to emphasize that, you know, if we build this project, let's build it right. Let's build it compatible with the Westwood Park neighborhood, with the Sunnyside neighborhood. You know, I don't think that high-rise apartments or high-rise buildings are appropriate for this project. So let's make sure we build this neighborhood, this project right, because if we, when we do, we're going to live with this project for the next 50 to 100 years. So let's make sure we do it right. Thank you.
I'm just going to take Karen with the last person to speak, because we're over. It's 9:00.
I can be very.
Is there one more also?
I can be very quick. Corey Smith, representing San Francisco Housing Action Coalition. We are actually encouraging the city right now to get involved in a development proposal of the Brisbane Baylands, just south of the city. We think it's a great place to build housing. It's right along transit corridors, and if anybody's interested in advocating for housing down there, please come up to me afterwards. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hello,
guess I should also appreciate your service, even though it's a thankless task. A little perspective, the first year of the college's accreditation crisis, and maybe it was shortly before the Board of Trustees was removed and those state appointees came in, about 2013, faculty, students, and community reached out to the city for how the city could help. And there ended up being a Eric Marr did an economic study, showed that there's some $300 million of economic activity provided through the college, and there are various other resources. And Ed Lee helped too. He said, well, we got the real estate department, they can help you. So he had his eye sharply on the value of this land. He's the one who was allied with those people who were willing to sacrifice the college. So Chris Hansen spoke very pointedly about, and Simon, about the fiduciary need, what that means, what we're talking about. And I don't see how you, it sounds like you're not just excluding people in this room, you're excluding community interest in this project. There's more than the fiduciary trust. There's trust for the whole city, and there's a failure to understand, you know, you're reaching out for help from the college. Also, people here have defined who is at the college, who is talking, or who is in a position to. And they're, you know, insiders because they're in control, but they are outsiders, and it's not representing what the college needs at this time.
Yeah, so that's the last public comment. So I just want to say that we're not going to meet on October, whatever that first, or the 10th. We will do a poll to figure out when we'll meet, and we'll get that up online, and we'll have agenda items. And if folks have agenda items that they'd like to see on the agenda, let the planning team, let the city staff know. John, you want to comment?
One thing you can do in October is October 1st, you'll be the first to know we're going to have an opening ceremony at the new Unity Plaza right down the street here. It should be a lot of fun. There's going to be music and entertainment, and you get to be the first people to sit down and really enjoy the new social hub of the neighborhood. And hopefully that the great design that went into that beautiful square, I don't know if anybody's been able to peek through the fences, but if we can just do half of that kind of design in the open spaces that we're working on in the reservoir, we'd be really fortunate.
Okay, thank you. You need to turn 9:06 p.m.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.